We are only a few days away from AEW All In Texas. This is their biggest show of the year, and tonight was the final Dynamite before All In. There is one more show left, technically, which is Collision, which is coming up tomorrow night. It's been happening a lot lately, a lot of Thursday Collision episodes. But this go-home show is in the books, and it ended with the babyfaces standing tall, which gives me a little bit of pause as far as what we may be seeing on Saturday. Not all of the babyfaces are going to be standing tall smiling when this show is over on Saturday. But there's only one babyface that really matters, and that is Hangman Adam Page, because he was in the main event tonight, as was Jon Moxley. They kept their interaction to a minimum, even though they were in the same eight-man tag team match. They, of course, are having their Texas death match on Saturday for the briefcase, which is really what the championship has become. We do not have an AEW world title. We have not had one since October. What we have is a championship briefcase. That is what is at stake on Saturday in Arlington. And what they did tonight on the show, I thought, was they did a decent job of giving you that last little bit of final hype for the key matches on the show. Not everything was great in terms of what they did. I can't sit here and tell you that my excitement level is any different than it was coming into the show. It really isn't. But I was looking forward to the show even before Dynamite came on the air tonight. That's the show I'm looking forward to most this weekend. That's the show I plan on covering this weekend, in addition to Evolution, is going to be All In on Saturday. And so when it came to the key matches, you're talking about the main event, Texas Death. You're talking about Omega and Okada, who were not on the show, but we got a very good video package. Actually, very similar to what they did on Raw Monday night with Rhea Ripley and Io Sky, except that is the main event at Evolution on Sunday, but they weren't on the show either, and we got a video package. They did the same thing with Omega and Okada tonight. Mercedes and Toni Storm, one last face-to-face confrontation in the ring, which we will talk about. The Hurt Syndicate and the tag team title situation, we'll get into that as well. We know who is entering number two now in the women's gauntlet match. We had MJF and Mark Briscoe, who are 1 and 2 in the men's gauntlet match. They had what they called a talky-talk in the ring tonight. So we're going to talk about it all. We're going to have a little talky-talk here on YouTube, because this is your AEW Dynamite review. It is Wednesday, July 9th. 2025, I am the Solemn Monster. Every time I think of July 9th, I always think of that one episode of Raw from 2001 where we had this ECW invasion in the first half of the show. So exciting to watch. And by the time the show was over, they killed it. They formed the alliance. July 9th will always live in infamy in my head for that episode of Raw's War. Like and subscribe. Super chats are open as well. Your support is always appreciated. I already see a few coming on in here, which is awesome. I will be reading through all of them. That's what we do here on this stream. So get them on in. Hit that like button. If we hit 400 minimum likes, we will do our Be the Booker segment, which we did not do last week. So let's hit that thumbs up. As we get into what I thought on the whole was a pretty decent go-home show. Nothing blow-away, but I felt like for the most part they did what they had to do tonight, and there was some stuff to like, and there was some stuff that I didn't care for. So let's get into this opening segment here, because we had Mercedes Moné. Now, actually, before I even get into the opening segment, let me just remind everybody who is wondering what the plan is for this weekend. I will be live after All In Texas. We're going to have the full review live here on YouTube. That'll be on Saturday night. And then we have episode 920 of The Sound Off. The podcast will drop on Sunday. And then we have Evolution on Sunday night. So there's a bunch of shows coming up this weekend. I myself will be in Texas on Friday night, working House of Glory. I have HOG duties, and then flying right back to New York the next morning. So keep me in your thoughts when it comes to that flight. As long as there's no delays, then I should be here in time to watch All In, and the review should not be interrupted. But of course, you never know with these things. So I got my fingers crossed that everything goes well with my flight. I'm coming home, you know, pretty early. I think my flight leaves at 7 in the morning on Saturday, so hopefully we'll be okay as far as that goes. Mercedes Moné, She made her entrance for the opening segment. This was a face-to-face with her opponent at All In, the AEW Women's World Champion, Timeless Toni Storm. And Mercedes was in the ring first, and she said there were two director's chairs sitting in the ring. And she said that she wanted this to be a civil conversation, and she asked Toni to come out to the ring. And instead, Toni appeared on the big screen in the back, and she was with Luther, and said only two things come from Texas. She's at least one of them. Mercedes called her a mark and told her to stop hiding and come down to the ring. So Toni speed walked down to the ring. Didn't like being called a mark, I guess. So we had all of Mercedes' many, many titles hanging from the top rope as a backdrop to what we were getting here in the ring, a backdrop to this conversation. And Mercedes grabbed two glasses of champagne from Luther outside the ring. He handed them to her, and she handed one of them to Toni so that they could toast Seven Belts Monet, which I guess is what she would be if she wins the championship this weekend. Seven Belts Monet. Nobody asked for that. Nobody is hoping for Seven Belts Monet. Nobody who cares about the AEW women's division is hoping for Seven Belts Monet. Let's put it that way. So Mercedes took a swig and she complained about the champagne being burnt. Said that it must have been frozen in the past. Is that a thing? Burnt champagne? I've never heard of that. Toni told her to cut the performative bullshit and save it for your entrance. She insulted her as a fraud with the authenticity of a spray tan in a rainstorm and the emotional depth of a kiddie pool. She called Mercedes a pussy-faced fraud. At least that's what I think she called her, because they censored the first part of this. And she said that all these belts are just a mask for her to hide behind. And she demanded to know what the hell she's so afraid of. So Mercedes actually took a seat in one of the director's chairs and said that they have traveled similar paths, the two of them, but they are nothing alike. She called herself better and classier than Toni. Said that she had gone to hell and made the devil her bitch. And nobody was going to stop the Monet train. She said that the AEW Women's World title is her destiny. She is the Alpha. She is the Omega. She is the everything in between. Toni said, legacies don't exist, because Mercedes is out here talking about her legacy. She says, legacies don't exist. One day they will all die. We're all going to die. We're all going to turn to dust. All that matters is one moment, and that is the moment they step in the ring and go face to face, and Mercedes realizes that she fears an ordinary life, but the only thing that Toni fears is an ordinary death. Thought that was a pretty cool line. Toni said that she believes that Mercedes deserves all the titles in the world, but not this one. She will go down as the woman who just couldn't win the big one. And Mercedes said that she wanted this to go down civil, but she guesses that she was wrong. So this Sunday, I mean this Saturday, boy, did the crowd eat her up for that one. They showered her in chants of "you fucked up." She had a different show on the brain, obviously. She says, this Saturday made the best woman win. And they both toasted, and they downed their champagne. And then Toni told her, eat shit, bitch. And Mercedes tried to take a shot at her. Toni got her on her back for Mercedes' own statement maker finish. But Mercedes scrambled out of the ring to safety. Toni got up on the middle rope. She had the bottle of champagne in her hand. She was guzzling champagne. And then she's going around the ring. She's shaking her tits around. Everybody's cheering for Toni Storm. And then she held up her title belt, and again she yelled, eat shit, bitch. So Mercedes fucked up the date of the show, and the crowd let her have it. They were not going to let her get by with that one. Obviously, she had some evolution on the brain. It is a very busy weekend. There is a battle royal on Sunday, by the way. Can you imagine? If Mercedes were to become Seven Belts Monet on Saturday, and then she wins the battle royal on Sunday, and then she gets another title shot at Clash in Paris, she might be eight belts Monet before long. Someone has to stop this woman. I will say this about this promo. Toni Storm completely outclassed Mercedes. This was Toni Storm's night as far as you want to grade them on the microphone. Mercedes, outside of her little fuck up there, it was a perfectly pedestrian promo, but that's all it was. She was saying a lot of stuff. It didn't really feel like she believed what she was saying. It didn't feel like there was a lot of meaning behind it. It was her saying, I'm the alpha, I'm the omega, I'm the this, I'm the that, blah, 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 blah. We've heard this every single week. Toni Storm goes out there. She's a master on the mic. She's got a way with words. She's very entertaining. So she took this promo. Now we head into Saturday in the championship match, and that's really what it's all about. What are they going to do? Are they going to have Mercedes win another title and remain undefeated? And if she wins the world championship, I suspect it will be some time before we see her lose an actual match. And that's the part that's troublesome, because she still has the TBS title. So if the idea is to put the world title on her and not beat her for a while yet, I'm not really sure what that accomplishes. What I am expecting is the two of them to go out there and have a kick-ass match. More often than not, Mercedes has gone out there during her run in this company, and she has had great matches. Some matches are better than others, but for the most part, she's had great matches, and Toni Storm has had great matches. And when you consider the stage that they find themselves on, this is the biggest possible match in the women's division that AEW could do. So I'm looking forward to the match. I just wonder, given the outcome, whatever the outcome is going to be, where that is going to take the women's division as we head into the fall. The outcome of this match is actually going to be very important when it comes to that AEW women's division. Now, backstage, Jon Moxley cut a promo by himself on Hangman Adam Page. He said he lost their first battle in Texas Death, but that was just one fight. He said he's never lost a war of attrition, and Hangman won't be able to handle the pressure of the expectations on his back. Moxley said that whether he likes it or not, Hangman is all the way in on Saturday, and there's no turning back now. You don't want to be all the way in on Jon Moxley. I mean, to me, that just doesn't sound very pleasant. Meanwhile, outside the building, the Young Bucks were shown arriving in their ugly limousine, which we would come back to later in the show. We had Brody King and Bandido taking on Kyle Fletcher and Konosuke Takeshita, representing the Don Callis family. Don Callis joined on commentary and said that he's only speaking to Taz because he's the only one sitting at this table that has drawn money. King and Takeshita, they collide like bulls right out of the gate, just as the bell sounded, until Takeshita went for the eyes. Then he tagged in Fletcher, who was quickly mowed down and chopped in the corner. Bandido tagged in for a sliding dropkick, and King followed with a senton. Bandido wanted Takeshita because these two guys are having a Ring of Honor World Championship match on Friday. There's another show. Friday night is Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor. Bandido was in the main event defending the ROH title against Takeshita, so he wanted him. Takeshita got in the ring. They traded tilt-a-whirl attempts until Takeshita ran through Bandido with a clothesline. There was a low bridge that sent Brody outside the ring where Fletcher met him with a dive, and then Bandido followed, and then Takeshita followed, and finally King followed, because everybody dives. If one person does it, everybody's got to do it, even the big guy. So he wiped out everybody to complete the cycle. Bandido got worked over through the commercial break, but when things came back, there was a pop-up DDT that spiked Kyle Fletcher on his head. King made the hot tag. He flattened Fletcher with a black hole slam. Hit the corner cannonball for two. Fletcher battled back with a desperation Michinoku driver into the double down. That allowed Bandido to tag in. Fletcher held Bandido in the corner for Takeshita to hit a haluva kick. And then Fletcher flew in with a kick of his own. They tried for an assisted corner powerbomb. Bandido countered out of it in midair with a super rana. Bandido hit a frog splash on Takeshita, but Fletcher broke up the pin. So King and Fletcher, they spilled outside. King tried his cross, that cross body block he does up against the barricade. Fletcher, though, moved out of the way. Meanwhile, back inside, Bandido wanted a 21-plex. Takeshita avoided it. He pulled Bandido to the top. Bandido backflipped onto Fletcher outside, and Bandido quickly tried a tornado dive inside. But Takeshita just blasted him with a forearm shot out of midair on the way down. And then he hit the raging fire, and he got the pin on the Ring of Honor World Champion here. This was a good match. Logical finish, given that Takeshita is challenging for the title on Friday. If Bandido would have gone in there and beaten it, I don't see Takeshita winning the ROH title. I don't see the need for that. So if that's the case, him getting a win here is something to give him a bit of momentum going into that main event on Friday. I'm still not completely sure why that match is even happening, but you know, they got to mix ROH and they got to mix AEW together, because otherwise nobody's going to be seeing it. They still haven't reached that critical mass of viewership when it comes to the ROH product, because it's still hidden behind a paywall. So this is the only way to get exposure for some of these people, and so that's why they do it. Fletcher, though, we know he's challenging for the TNT Championship on Saturday, and he should be winning that championship. Brody King, Takeshita, Bandido, they will all be a part of the Men's Casino Gauntlet match, assuming, of course, that the gauntlet doesn't end before they make their way in, because remember, the rules of the gauntlet is that first fall to a finish. So it could end in the first 5 minutes. It won't, but it could. So not necessarily all of the scheduled participants will actually make their way out for the match. We go backstage, and we see FTR standing by with Stokely Hathaway, of course, and the Patriarchy. Christian Cage, Nick Wayne, Kip Sabian, Mother Wayne. They're all backstage for an interview with Renee, because they are going to be teaming up in an 8-man tag team match on Collision tomorrow against the Outrunners and Jet Speed. Boy, we've been getting a lot of these lately. All-star 8-man tag, all-star 10-man tag, all-star 6-man tag, all-star 8-women tag. We got basically the same match on Collision 2 weeks in a row. They just swapped out one person. I think it was Julia Hart for Penelope Ford. Literally ran back the same match. I mean, are they so devoid of ideas on that second show that they just have no choice but to keep running these multi-person matches every single week? It's getting out of hand. So we're getting another one on Collision. Another Thursday episode of Collision, by the way. This is absolutely a test here for a permanent move to Thursdays. I don't know when it's going to happen, but I think Collision ends up on Thursdays soon enough. And honestly, I think more people would probably watch the show if it was on Thursdays. I don't know how many more people would watch the show, but if the show aired on Thursdays instead of Saturdays, the audience would be a little bit bigger. So Christian says that he could run down all of FTR's accomplishments right now, because FTR, obviously, they are multi-time tag team champions, all the great matches that they've had. They don't have all show, though. He respects where their heads are at of late. He goes, you know, maybe if you scratch our backs, we can scratch yours if we walk out of that match on Saturday as the AEW Tag Team Champions. Stokely Hathaway says, you know, it's an injustice that FTR is not in that match at All In, which I agree. I don't understand why they didn't just add them to the match. I thought there was a chance they would do it tonight and turn it into a four-way on Saturday. They didn't do that. And so instead, you have Stokely here complaining about the fact that they're not in there. And the fact, you know, these guys are 10-time tag team champions, and these guys have 65 victories, and they just had another classic on Collision last week against the Outrunners. But you know what? We're not in the match. You guys are. As far as the back-scratching thing is concerned, let's see how tomorrow night goes. And he went to shake Christian's hand. Christian didn't extend his hand back, so he physically picked up Christian's hand to shake Christian's hand, and then Stokely Hathaway and FTR, they walked off. And Christian then took his hand and wiped it. After Stokely's handshake, he wiped his hand on his shirt. You know, it's bad enough that this guy goes around insulting people's dead fathers, but he's a racist too. What a heel. FTR not being added to the match is a little weird to me. This is the way they've chosen to do it, though. I think the destination is the same. See, my idea was And I was talking about this even on TNT last night with JD. I said, look, it's a three-way match. They turned it into a three-way match. It seemed like we were heading for Jet Speed against the Hurt Syndicate. And then they decided last week to add the Patriarchy. So now Christian Cage and Nick Wayne have been added to this match. Why were they added to this match? If you think about it logically, it doesn't make too much sense because the story really has been the Hurt Syndicate and Jet Speed over the last few weeks, and Jet Speed trying to prove why they deserve a shot at the titles. Christian, the last match, okay, that Christian and Nick Wayne won was, I guess, a couple of weeks ago on Collision. They beat Big Bill and Brian Keith. So I guess by virtue of that win, they were added to this match. Before that match 2 weeks ago, you would have to go all the way back to Revolution in March to find Christian having any kind of match. And that wasn't a tag match. That was when he cashed in his world title contract unsuccessfully. So he was in the match for maybe 2 minutes. It's not like he's been wrestling a lot of matches lately. But they mentioned this on commentary. They said, you know, Christian and Nick Wayne, they're trying to become the first father-son tag team champions. I mentioned that news item from BodySlam.net a couple of weeks ago that AEW has had two sets of tag team titles basically sitting on a shelf that were created a year ago, that they're just waiting for the right moment to debut. One is a set of women's tag team titles. The other is what they are apparently calling intergenerational tag team titles, basically father and son tag team titles, which when I heard this idea, like I had to process what I had just read because this doesn't make any sense. Like you can't even find enough father and son teams in this company to fill all the fingers on one hand. So it just struck me as this has got to be a gimmick thing for Christian and Nick Wayne. This can't possibly be a legitimately newly created set of official AEW tag team titles, because that would be fucking dumb, right? That would be very stupid. I even said, if you insist on having even more belts, it would make more sense to have intergender titles, not intergenerational tag team titles. So when I heard them mention that, oh, they're looking to become the first father and son pairing as tag team champions, that made me think of that. And I wonder if they're going to introduce some kind of a gimmick with the two of them, I don't know. But, you know, as far as them being in this match, I still think they get to the same place. I think they get to the same place because we see the Patriarchy interacting with FTR. We see Christian interacting with FTR. Whatever is going to happen on Saturday, and it, actually, either way, whether or not FTR gets involved and Christian and Nick Wayne win, they don't win, all roads lead to an Adam Copeland return, very likely this weekend. Something will go sour involving the Patriarchy and FTR, even though they were being kind of nice to each other tonight. And ultimately, the destination here is Christian putting his differences with Copeland aside to become tag team partners again, and they wrestle FTR, whether it's for the titles or not. I think that's the play for Toronto at All Out in September. So that's why they've been inserted into this situation in FTR, and they did the segment they did tonight because I think it's leading in that direction. Do they need to be in this match? They don't. Yeah, they really don't, but I'm going to talk more about this in a second when we get to the Hurt Syndicate stuff and the potential outcomes of that match on Saturday. We'll get to that. We got to get to this first, though. Blake Christian. We go from one Christian to another. Blake Christian was already in the ring for his match with Ricochet. I do have to mention that Ricochet just this evening, a few hours ago, was announced as wrestling the Amazing Red in House of Glory at our big annual high-intensity show the night before SummerSlam, August 1st. It's been a while since they've shared a ring together, so that's going to be a great match, but Ricochet was against Blake Christian tonight, not against the Amazing Red. Christian got an inset promo saying that he's all alone after the Gates of Agony attacked his partner Lee Johnson on Collision. Christian said that he hopes Ricochet leaves his dogs at the gate tonight so that he can kick his ass one-on-one. And Excalibur talked about Ricochet also being in the Casino Gauntlet. Right, that's where he debuted last year. So that's what he'll be doing on the show on Saturday. Christian got a hot start. He left Ricochet scrambling outside, which forced Christian to give chase. suckered him into the ring. Christian sent him back outside and followed with a twisting corkscrew dive, because everybody dives. So then we have the Gates of Agony making their way out. Bishop Khan and Tonga Loa. Tonga Loa fan's going to love that. Tonga Loa fan is going to love that. He would love it if Tonga Loa was on this show. Tonga Loa should be on all the shows. Tonga Loa should be on Evolution this Sunday. Maybe he'll be in the Battle Royal. He can win, and then he can get his guaranteed title match at Clash in Paris. Bishop Khan and Toa Leona, they show up in the aisleway. That was the distraction so that Ricochet could sneak up behind Christian and throw him into the steps. That took us into the commercial break. Ricochet controlled during the break, but Christian fought back with a rolling Spanish fly for two. Christian connected with a leaping cutter off the middle rope and a springboard 450 for another near fall. He wanted another dive, because of course he did. But Khan and Leona tried to attack, only for Christian to use their backs as like a ramp, basically. And he walked across their backs onto the apron. Ricochet then distracted the referee, Bryce Remsburg. Was it Bryce in this match? Maybe it wasn't Bryce, whoever the referee was. But that gave the Gates of Agony a chance to squash Christian outside. And then Ricochet connected with the Spirit Gun inside. Instead of ending it right there, though, he hit Vertigo, and then he put the match away. And after the match was over, Gates of Agony hit their Open the Gates finish on Christian, where they picked him up and slammed him. And then they posed with Ricochet, even though the good Bishop forgot his position. And Ricochet had to direct traffic and say, no, stand here. Stand here. And then he went into the proper position. Blake Christian never wins anything. He just doesn't. And his matches all follow the same formula. He's talented, and they'll give him more offense than you would think that they would give him for someone who never wins any of his matches. And that was the case here. I'm just wondering, you know, Ricochet needed help from the Gates of Agony to beat a man who never wins. What does that say about Ricochet? That he needed their assistance to beat Blake Christian, of all people. I like the pairing, though. I like the pairing. You know, Ricochet's been searching for a crew for many weeks now. This gives him some muscle behind him. It also is another trio to go after the trios titles, for anybody who still cares about those titles. I just think it's strange, though, that he needed their help to beat Blake Christian, of all people. I mean, I'm just saying. Renee was backstage with the Hurt Syndicate asking about MJF's one-on-one talky-talk with Mark Briscoe later tonight. MJF said that he never said anything about it being one-on-one. He's not going out there alone tonight. Says Briscoe's about to get hurt. So MVP popped in and said, look, we got a photo shoot. He was talking to Lashley and Benjamin. So he pulled them away. They went to go back to their locker room, which was just around the corner, and there's a commotion. So MJF goes in to find out what's going on, and they find a note on the whiteboard from JetSpeed that says, hey, Shelton, since I already pinned you on Collision, this would be Kevin Knight, figured we would take the titles. Happy birthday, JetSpeed. Is it Shelton? You know what? I didn't realize. Is it Shelton's birthday today? I have to check this out now and see if it actually is the man's birthday. Let's take a look and see. Is it Shelton Benjamin's birthday today? These are the things I need to know. It is July 9th, 1975. Wow, it is his 50th birthday. We all should look so good at the age of 50. 50 years old. Shelton Benjamin. How about that? He was born the same year that Jaws came out. Jaws just celebrated its 50th anniversary. So does Shelton Benjamin. God bless him. He looks like he may be in the best shape of his life. So anyway, that was the message that they left on the whiteboard. So they stole their tag team titles, and so the Hurt Syndicate was not happy. And they told MJF, we got to go deal with this. And MJF realized that that means he's going to be all alone now for his little talky talk that he was about to have with Mark Briscoe. We got an excellent video package for the Kenny
Omega. By the power of Valhalla.
Oh, wait a minute.
It's vintage.
We must wait.
Coal-tar.
We must wait and acknowledge the man himself. Coal-tar is with us here tonight. Fire Panda with a $51 Coal-tar super chat. Maybe Coal-tar will be in the casino gauntlet on Saturday. Thank you, Fire Panda. I appreciate you. We got an excellent video package for the Kenny Omega Kazuchika Okada match at All In, winner take all. In the video here, they showed highlights of all of their New Japan matches, as well as their run in so far in AEW. Footage of Callis, Don Callis betraying Omega in that steel cage match, going back a ways. Callis in the video said that he will wipe Omega from the AEW history books. Okada felt great seeing Omega's blood. Omega said Okada will get a different Kenny Omega at All In, while Okada said that he will hurt Kenny, maybe even kill him. This is what he said. He said he might kill Kenny Omega. You know, the Kazuchika Okada that we have seen so far here in AEW doesn't really seem to have enough energy to kill a fly. So if we can get that version of Kenny of Kazuchika Okada, who can actually kill a man this weekend, then we'll be good. We'll be in good business here because we'll get the Okada of old. That's what I'm banking on in this match. That's what I'm looking forward to. I want him to dig down deep. I want him to unlock, grab that key and just unlock that crate and let him out. Let out the Okada that I know is buried deep within. If there was one match that we would see him back for in full form, it's this match on Saturday. This is the match that Kenny Omega and Kazuchika Okada were supposed to have at Wembley. Previously, Kenny was hurt. It didn't happen. So now we're getting it in Texas. This is the match that Tony Khan had in mind the moment he brought this man into this company. So looking forward to it. That's actually the match I'm looking most forward to. Even though we've already seen it before, it is the match I personally am most looking forward to. And this video here was excellent, I will say. So then it was time for the talky talk in the ring with Mark Briscoe and MJ. My God, I feel like I'm reading a bedtime story to a three-year-old. They're in the ring. MJF mocks the crowd by saying, "Howdy, y'all. I hope Briscoe doesn't mosey all the way down to All In because he'll dog walk him." MJF said stepping in the ring with him is about as ignorant as throwing rocks at a man with a machine gun. It's an old Roddy Piper line. Telling the hillbilly here to take a walkie walk back to his meth lab in Dumpster Fire, Delaware to feed all 95 of his inbred children. Mark Briscoe does have a lot of children. I've actually lost count of how many kids he has now. I think I want to say 7 or 8. I'm sure there'll be more. They'll hit double digits. He's going to have a Stu Hart family. They're going to have like 13, 14 kids by the time it's all said and done. Briscoe said that what MJF needs is a good old country ass whooping, and it's going to happen at All In. Briscoe is proud to be a redneck. He's working hard for every dollar that he puts in his pocket. MJF is wearing his dumbass suit and his scarf that probably cost more than Briscoe's entire wardrobe. MJF might have money, but the good Lord has blessed Briscoe with family and friends, which MJF is bankrupt in. Says the word of the day, folks, is bankrupt, as MJF is morally bankrupt and has no soul. Well, then The Rock is definitely not interested. Briscoe sees right through MJF, and he knows what he's about to do. He's about to talk some dumb shit about his brother to get him all riled up, but Briscoe has been preparing all week for it. So he tells him, "Go ahead, do your thing, lay it on me." MJF said, "I would never say anything bad about your brother. Your brother is going to go down as one of the best wrestlers of all time, one of the greatest people to ever set foot inside a wrestling ring." May says, "I looked it up. Mark Briscoe has 8 children, and he has a 9th on the way. What did I say? He's going to hit double digits. Give it another year. He'll hit 10. He's building a little Briscoe army for himself. I mean, somebody's got to run the farm, I guess. I mean, they have all those chickens. More hands to help out. But MJF is acting as if, no, I would never say anything horrible about your brother. Such a great wrestler and a great human being. There's a special place in heaven for someone like Jay Briscoe. However, MJF pities his brother as he has to look down from the pearly gates of heaven to see that Mark Briscoe has become a joke. He is looking down and seeing his brother go from being one half of the greatest tag teams of all time, Dem Boys, to being nothing more than a joke. Now, MJF is not a betting man, but he bets if Jay Briscoe was somehow able to be here tonight, he would say, "Chicken, it shouldn't have been me. I almost read that last line wrong. It shouldn't have been me in that accident. It should have been you." Look, I know what he's doing here, and I was expecting it. I mean, the minute they announced that MJF and Briscoe were going to have a back-and-forth promo, if you have been following the MJF character for any length of time, what he will often do is go for the low-hanging fruit, right? He will intentionally stoop as low as he possibly can to try to be as just irredeemable as he could possibly be. And we've seen him do this time and time again. This is really not a surprise. It's actually very predictable at this point when it comes to these types of segments. And, you know, he went for the cheap heat. I don't know that it got necessarily, I wouldn't call it, you know, like a huge heat reaction. It got sort of a gasp from the crowd. But that was the cue for Mark Briscoe to double leg him and just sort of snap and take him down. That was sort of the fighting words, you know, that led to him attacking MJF. Again, it's what he does. Do I wish that he wouldn't rely on it so heavily? Of course. But it's what he does. It's what his character does. You know, he tries to just go as low as he possibly can to try to get a rise out of somebody. And in this case, what did you think he was going to say? Of course he was going to bring up Jay Briscoe. So he double-legged him down, and he nearly got a Jay Driller when the Hurt Syndicate's music hit, out walked MVP Shelton Benjamin and Bobby Lashley. They surrounded the ring. Jet speed. Quickly attacked from behind, though. Meanwhile, MJF, he bolts out of the ring and into the crowd like he was trialing for the Olympics. And Mark Briscoe chased after him. So that was the end of that, as far as the two of them were concerned. Briscoe did come back later in the back with Renee and cut just a wild, wacky promo. I'm not even going to attempt to review or run down exactly what he said. It was insane. But we didn't see MJF or hear from MJF again after this. So with them out of the way, Jetspeed continued their attack on the Hurt Syndicate. And they blasted them with their own tag team title belts. That's stolen property, by the way. So they're attacking them with their titles. They slam Shelton Benjamin into the ring steps and then flatten Bobby Lashley. All of this came by way of ambush, I should point out. So while it is nice to see these two finally get some offense after getting their asses kicked multiple times over the last several weeks, it did come by way of an ambush, with them using the tag team titles to attack these men. The supposed baby faces did this. The Patriarch, he slowly walked out from the back into the aisle. Christian Cage and Kip Sabian, they slammed Lashley and MVP up against the barricade. Nick Wayne joined Christian, and each of them delivered a concerto to Bobby Lashley's knee. Twice they did this. Back in the ring, Benjamin ate a roundhouse kick from Speedball Mike Bailey, and Knight followed with his twisting UFO splash off the top. Jet Speed and the Patriarchy, they stared each other down as the announcers said the tag team title match at All In now looks like a toss-up. It has moved into the toss-up column. So, what happened here? the patriarchy being in this match, does it really make a lot of sense? It doesn't make a lot of sense. It would have made more sense to just pick one team, as they seemingly had done with Speedball and Kevin Knight. Whatever you want to say about the buildup, which has not been great, that was the match that they were building to for the pay-per-view. Now, obviously, what they're trying to do also is get as many people on the show as possible. That's the whole point of having the gauntlets. And in this case, they wanted to get Christian and Nick Wayne on the show, FTR. You know what? We have one more show left. We will leave open the possibility that FTR could still be added to this match to make it a fatal four-way. Because Stokely Hathaway, even tonight in the back, made a pretty compelling case for why they should be in the match. I mean, they've been on television winning matches more consistently than the patriarchy, so why would the patriarchy be added and not FTR? They absolutely should be added to this match tomorrow night. And maybe they will. We got one show left. It's entirely possible. If they ask Tony Khan very nicely, maybe FTR will be added to this match. But as far as what are we looking at here? One of two things is what we're looking at here. Either they were added to the match, Christian and Nick Wayne, specifically to take the loss, which is very likely. And of the two, it would be Nick Wayne, more so than Christian, that would take the loss. And they're not going to take the titles off of the Hurt Syndicate. Or they were added to the match because they're going to take the loss, but not for the Hurt Syndicate, for Jet Speed. And it's their way of getting the titles off the Hurt Syndicate without having to directly beat the Hurt Syndicate. Look at what they did here on this show. They beat up Bobby Lashley. They injured his leg. He's going into this match now on Saturday not at 100%. He's got a gimpy leg now. They have given them an out to potentially lose this match if they wanted to take the titles off of them. I don't believe the titles are coming off of the Hurt Syndicate, regardless of who has been added to this match. I still think they hold on to these titles. If FTR gets added, it makes it a little more likely that we get a title change, because to take it back to the Copeland stuff, when we get Cope and Christian, and we will, against FTR, it's just a matter of when, maybe Tony Khan wants that to be for the tag team titles. If FTR gets added to this match, which they should, and if they win the match, you now have a tag team title match, a big match, that you can set up for All Out in September. You've also taken the titles off the Hurt Syndicate without beating them, because I've been wondering, like, who the hell is going to beat these guys for these belts? They've been so dominant. And there really is just this severe lack of competition right now in the tag team division. Believable, credible challengers for those tag team titles. Having a multi-man match gives them that out, if they want to take that out. I personally don't think they are going to take it, but it's right there if they want to. They want to get those titles off them onto somebody else and not pin Bobby and not pin Shelton. There it is. You got fucking Nick Wayne in the match, okay? You got Nick Wayne. That probably is the only reason he's even in this match, is to take the losing fall. So that's what we're looking at here. Take your pick, you know, on what you think is going to go down. I will say this about what they did here, even though, again, it's very strange that you've got the baby faces doing some of the things they did. This is what they needed. This is what Jet Speed needed. They have been beaten down and made to look less than now for weeks. Remember when they were put through those tables, or maybe it was one table in the aisleway by the stage, and they were left literally like stacking up a pile of garbage to be collected by the garbage man. And then there was another attack and they got the shit kicked out of them. And the idea was, well, they kept coming back, you know, and Kevin Knight gets on the mic and, you know, so we're not dead yet. It's like, yeah, well, you know what? You look about 85% dead, and they just kept getting their asses kicked. So I know what they were going for, but it did nothing to get me excited to see this match. And it did nothing to make me think they had a real shot of winning the titles. So the fact that they came out and got one over on the Hurt Syndicate, Is it too, you know, too little too late? Maybe, but they kind of had to do this. They had to give them a shot in the arm. They had to give them some credibility against these men because of how poorly they have come off in these angles over the last several weeks. So the whole tag team thing is probably the thing that I'm least inspired by going into this pay-per-view. You look at the talent in the match. It should end up being a very good match. But as far as the build to how we got here, probably I would say the worst thing probably on the entire show when it comes to promoting these key matches for their biggest show of the year. In turn, when I look at all the matches and how we got here, whether it's even Mercedes and Tony or Kenny and Omega or, you know, whatever else we're going to get on this card on Saturday, this stuff here and how we've gotten here is the one that just makes me look at it and go, yeah, you know what? This doesn't work for me. I'm going to need these guys to go out there this weekend and just make me forget all about all the shit that we've seen on TV over the last few weeks and just go out there and just have a kick-ass match. And I'm sure they will. Now, coming out of this, we had a women's four-way match to determine who enters the women's casino gauntlet match at All In the number two spot. The number one spot has already been decided upon. We know it's going to be Chris Statlander entering at number one. She was sitting in the crowd. She was watching and observing this match here, which had Megan Bain, Tekla the Spider Lady, Ty Mello, and Queen Aminata. Coming out of a break, Ty Mello badly mistimed a running cutter. So basically what happened here is Aminata gave Tekla kind of a wheelbarrow lift, and the idea was that Ty Mello was going to come charging in and catch Tekla out of midair and deliver a cutter. The only problem is she whiffed, and she went to go grab her, and whoever's fault it was, maybe Tekla didn't go down quick enough, maybe Ty Mello just missed. It looked terrible. She did not hit the cutter, and this did not go according to plan. We'll just say that. Megan Bain delivered a falcon arrow to Tekla a little while later for a two count. Bain grabbed Tekla onto her shoulders for Fate's Descent, which is her version of the F5, but instead of delivering her finish, she charged the ropes and threw this woman, beeled her out over the top rope onto Aminata and Ty Mello at ringside. That got a big pop. Then she dove through the ropes and wiped out all three women. Mello got Bain on her back a little while later and then flipped her over into the knee strike like a GTS. But Bain rolled to the floor before she could make the cover. So now Anna Jay and Penelope Ford appear at ringside and they're brawling on the floor. Or maybe they were out there the entire time. Actually, I think they were already out there. But they started brawling outside on the floor. Bain then landed a running sit-out powerbomb on Queen Aminata, and she got the pin to earn the number two spot in the Casino Gauntlet match on Saturday. I thought they might give the win here to Tekla because she's the new girl, but that works. Megan Bain winning works. It works because Megan Bain is my pick to win the Women's Gauntlet on Saturday. And I said this in my predictions. If Toni Storm retains her title, I have Megan Bain winning the gauntlet. If Mercedes wins the championship, I'm going with Willow Nightingale to win the gauntlet. So those are my picks for the match on Saturday. After the break, Renee was in the back. She was about to interview Tekla when Aminata ran in to attack her, and the two women had to be separated. Even in this match here, in this four-way, they had a thing going on between the two of them where they were really kind of going in hard on each other. So it looks like they're going to keep this thing going here. You know, a decent women's mid-card feud. I have no issue with that. Aminata is somebody who's been around for a while, has not really gotten a lot of exposure. So if this, you know, gives her a chance to get more television time and to establish herself more on TV, a new face that we don't really get to see a lot of as compared to the bigger names, then that's great. That's great, because there's a lot of people right now sitting at home on the bench doing nothing for whatever reason. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that Tony has certain people slotted into, you know, positions on these shows. The women do not get nearly as much airtime as the men do to begin with. And so you end up with a bunch of people that we don't get to see a whole lot of. So giving some of the newer faces more screen time is not a bad thing. Aminata is not a bad wrestler. You know, so getting her in a feud with Tekla is fine. I don't know that they're going to be doing anything on the card from a singles, like a pre-show singles match. My guess is they'll just, you know, they'll end up in the women's casino gauntlet would be my guess. We had Samoa Joe or as Scott Steiner would say, Smojo, one-on-one with Wheeler Yuta. What the fuck is going on with this guy's hair? What is he going for here? It's like Tom Hanks after he was discovered at sea. Could someone get this man a haircut, please? I don't know what he's going for. Yuta raked the eyes to escape a muscle buster attempt, followed by a missile drop kick, then a dive to the outside. Quickly back inside, Yuta connects on a flying elbow. Joe, though, kicks out of one. Yuta hit a spinning arm breaker out of the corner, sank in a Kimura. But what do you think would happen if Wheeler Yuta tried to apply the Kimura to Brock Lesnar? What do you think would happen? I'd kind of like to see that. So it didn't work out here too well for him either. Joe got back to his feet. He hit the Manhattan drop, big boot, senton combo before hitting a snap power slam for a two count. Yuta pulled Bryce Remsburg in front of him to get the eye poke. And then he tried a skin the cat German suplex, but instead he got an O'Connor roll, which Joe easily kicked free from. And then Yuta landed right in the coquina clutch for the quick submission. After the match, Gabe Kidd ran out from the crowd. He attacked Joe from behind, laid him out before Powerhouse Hobbs and Katsuyori Shibata sprinted out to the ring. Kidd and Yuta then escaped. I said this previously on Collision, this past Collision, there was a segment in the back where Claudio was with Yuta. And he was being hounded by the cameraman for comment on what had just happened. And he threw out the challenge to the ops for a trios title match at All In. And I was wondering, okay, well, you got Yuta and you got Claudio, but they need a third man. I don't know that Pac is ready to come back. I mean, that ankle injury was pretty gnarly. And that was only in April, right? That was after, I think, the Dynamite after Dynasty, I think, is when he got hurt. So that would have been mid-April, probably too soon for a Pac return. And then I said, well, maybe Gabe Kidd. Now, Gabe Kidd is basically aligned with the Death Riders now. If they need somebody to plug into that spot, he would make sense. And then I raised the issue of Hook, who I think is going to, when that match happens, going to cost the ops the Trios titles. Because there's something going on there with Hook. Even when we saw Hook make that cameo at Anarchy in the Arena, you know, he came out to provide the assist, but he didn't look very happy with the ops. And then he just walked to the back, right? We haven't seen him since because he's been recovering from a concussion. So if he's about ready to come back, I could absolutely see him getting involved in some way and costing them the championships. I just couldn't imagine him being the third man on the Death Riders because that means he would be joining the Death Riders, and I don't want anybody to join the Death Riders. I don't want more Death Riders members. I want less. I don't want to add new people to the Death Riders. I want to do just the opposite. I want to start picking them off one by one. But they did not make the announcement of a Trios title match. So I don't know what's going on. Unless I missed it, I don't think they made the match official. You know, you sort of watch what they did here and it would lead you to believe that, okay, Gabe Kidd is going to join with them. This is going to be the match. I don't believe they made the match official, but my guess is that that will be a late addition to the show and we will have the Death Riders against the Ops for the Trios titles. On Saturday, I can't imagine that Tony Khan is not going to want to get Samoa Joe a spot on that All In show. But again, unless they said something on commentary and I missed it, I don't think they made that match official yet. I also don't know why, if they're not going to do the match on Saturday, why this match here was even necessary on this go-home show, where they're really promoting all of the key matches on Saturday. Why even have this match if you're not going to add a Trios title match to All In? This week's episode is sponsored by ExpressVPN. Imagine you're on a Zoom call with a client, and you make a snide comment about Karen, but she hears it because you forgot to mute yourself. Or maybe you're on a Zoom call with your camera turned off, but you forget that your audio is still on when you flush the toilet because you just had to go. You couldn't wait. And now everybody else knows it too. That'd be pretty embarrassing, wouldn't it? Forgetting to mute yourself is like going online without ExpressVPN. You don't have to do it, but if you don't, there may be some consequences to be paid. And those consequences could make your life very uncomfortable. But it all could have been avoided. Internet service providers, and that includes your mobile provider, by the way, they know every single website that you visit.
because all of your traffic flows through their servers on a daily basis. And in the U.S., these companies are legally allowed to sell your information to advertisers. ExpressVPN reroutes 100% of your traffic through secure encrypted servers, so your ISP can't see your browsing history. ExpressVPN is the best VPN because it hides your IP address, making it very hard for third parties to track your online activity. It's also easy to use with the tap of a button in the app, and it works across all of your devices, phones, laptops, tablets, you name it, it works. It also comes with Identity Defender, which is a new suite of tools to get your data removed from data brokers, alert you when your data appears on the dark web, and even insure you against data theft for up to $1 million. There's a reason that ExpressVPN is ranked number one by top tech reviewers like CNET and The Verge. I've used ExpressVPN on the road quite a few times when traveling to House of Glory shows, when I'm at the airport or the hotel, so I know it keeps me private. You've also heard me talking a lot about VPNs recently because of all the international WWE shows, which allows me to watch them when they air outside the US at an earlier start time. I did that with SmackDown in Riyadh last week. Watched the show early on Canadian Netflix with my ExpressVPN, and I'll be putting it to good use again next month when they have their next European tour. So now is a great time to sign up if you're thinking about it. Protect your online privacy today by visiting expressvpn.com/solomonster. That's expressvpn.com/solomonster to find out how you can get up to 4 months free. expressvpn.com/solomonster. The main event was what they billed as an all-star eight-man tag team match. We had the Young Bucks joining Jon Moxley and Claudio Castagnoli against Hangman Page, Will Ospreay, Powerhouse Hobbs, and Katsuyori Shibata, who stayed out there after the previous segment where they ran out. This was the party match of the night, where everyone did everything, and it was dives and big moves galore in this match. As soon as the bell sounded, Hangman turned Matt Jackson inside out with a lariat. He flattened him with a big boot before decking Nick and Claudio, but Moxley got away. The Bucks quickly gained control by double-teaming Page, opted, though, to pose, and therefore they missed a tag to Will Ospreay, who flew in with a crossbody. The match broke down outside. Ospreay flew onto the pile with a slingshot dive. Page hit the Orihara moonsault out onto everybody, and that took us into the commercial break. During the break, a table was set up outside the ring. Ospreay was worked over for the majority of the break. Claudio went for a corner charge. He missed. He posted himself, shoulder first. Moxley, though, tagged in. He was met with a snap suplex, which allowed Hangman to make the hot tag. Moxley quickly bailed, tagged Matt Jackson back in. There was a blind tag by Claudio. Matt was able to avoid a deadeye, and Claudio took over. Later on, the Bucks escaped the deadeye from Page. They hit a double super kick. They backflipped Ospreay, who was trying a double Pele kick, but then they hit him with a double super kick as well. Hobbs no-sold the double super kick at first, but he didn't no-sell the second one, and he fell backwards into the arms of Jon Moxley and Claudio outside, who then powerbombed him through that table that I mentioned was set up outside earlier. Shibata was left all alone in the ring with the Bucks, who hit the EVP trigger, which allowed Moxley to tag in, and he hit a neutralizer, or Claudio hit a neutralizer, and Moxley applied the bulldog choke for the quick ref stoppage, maybe a little too quick. After the match was over, this is where the chaos ensued. Hangman runs into the ring. He gets a few punches in before Wheeler Yuta and Gabe Kidd hit the ring, and Marina Shafir, she hands a chain to Jon Moxley, who wraps it around Hangman's throat. Ospreay tried to make the save. He got beaten down for his efforts. The Bucks and the Death Riders, they stood tall as Shafir handed the Bucks a pair of plastic bags while Ospreay and Page were being held on their knees. So they're going to suffocate these two men. We're going to see not one, but two instances here of attempted murder. When all of a sudden on the big screen, we cut to outside the arena, we presume outside the arena, and we see Swerve Strickland, who was conspicuous by his absence here. He was not part of any of this stuff, and he was not out here to make the save. He's sitting outside in some sort of truck. And he's sitting there, And actually, he was sitting in one of those dirt diggers that they use for construction. So he's sitting in this machine. He's cutting a promo on the Young Bucks. He's not even looking at the camera. He's looking straight ahead. He's cutting a promo on the Bucks, how what they've done this year has been just out of control. So he's taking some of it back, leaving the rest, of course, for Ospreay and himself on Saturday at All In. He goes, this is how vengeance goes. And they pull back, and we see him using the dirt digger to repeatedly crush the ugly limousine that the Bucks arrived in that says Founding Fathers on the side on the doors. And he uses the giant claw multiple times to come down and smash and flatten the top part of the limousine. So in the arena, the Bucks, of course, they drop the plastic bags. They leave the ring. They head to the back. Samoa Joe runs in. He makes the save. Now, Ospreay hits a huge dive out onto the Death Riders, which was completely unnecessary. This close to the pay-per-view, the match is already over. This guy's out here doing dives. Out onto the floor. Why take the risk? Why take the risk in this situation? Strickland climbed out of the dirt digger. We go back outside. He climbs out. He flips off the camera, goes, whose house? And walks off. Paige, meanwhile, was about ready to lay out Moxley in the ring with a buckshot lariat. And he springboarded into the ring. Claudio, at the very last possible second, takes the bullet for John Moxley. So now Hangman and Moxley are standing face to face. And we have a little bit of a stare down going on until Paige got tossed the chain. And this caused Marina Shafir to grab John Moxley and pull him out of the ring to safety. The Death Riders retreat with Paige, Ospreay, and the Ops all standing tall. But wait, we're not done yet. Cut to the outside, and the Bucks are frantically heading over to check on their hideous limousine, asking, how are we going to financially recover from this? Now, correct me if I'm wrong. When they were showing us those vignettes last week of them when they were in California, where their old home used to be, their school, their elementary school, right? They were riding in the limo and they were talking about how Tony Khan paid for all this. Wouldn't the limousine be a part of that? Or were they just referring to the shopping spree that they went on where they bought all those sneakers? Because I thought they indicated Tony Khan, he paid for all of this. So if that's the case, then Tony Khan should actually be the one who's upset here. He should be the one upset at Swerve for the damage that he just did to this limousine that these guys didn't pay for. The limousine, by the way, was also now tipped over onto its side. Prince Nana walks in, and he's letting, this is all in the parking lot. He walks in, and he's got his coffee in his hand, and he's laughing at the Bucks. And they turn around. This was all just it was a swerve. It was a distraction. It was running distraction. Because then the Bucks turn around and Swerve leaped. It was some kind of platform. Maybe it was a forklift, whatever it was. And he jumped off with a double swerve stomp to the Bucks on the pavement, which did not look great, but that was the visual they were going for. And Swerve walks off laughing, says he found the fathers. You get it? He found the fathers. So Swerve walks off with Prince Nana back into the arena. On stage, he meets Will Ospreay. They embrace. They're all smiles as they go off the air. I suspect it will not be all smiles for the baby faces on Saturday. Really, what this was here was a form of 50-50 booking, really, because they allowed Moxley to win the match. So he got the win. But in the end, it was the babyfaces who had all the momentum and they were left standing tall. Moxley did all he could in this match to avoid having to be in the ring for very long with Hangman. They kept their interaction to a minimum, as they should have, because you want to save the match for Saturday. Don't give too much away here on this show. So they kept their interaction to a minimum. And look, I thought that it was a hot angle to close the show. You had a lot going on. Probably too much going on, but you had a lot going on here. But in the end, it was Swerve and Ospreay smiling, Hangman standing there, chain around his neck, the Ops standing tall. As I said before, If we get a trios title match, I do believe the ops are going to be screwed out of those titles. The Young Bucks are wrestling Swerve and Ospreay. They're putting their EVP titles on the line. If the babyfaces don't win, then by the rules of the match, they will not be allowed to challenge for the AEW World title for the next year. And I do believe that the Young Bucks are going to win. And so neither of the two babyfaces are going to be eligible to compete for the World Championship unless, you know, Swerve turns heel on Ospreay because he blames Ospreay because it was his idea to add the dumb stipulation in the first place. And if the gauntlet hasn't happened yet, imagine then if Swerve comes back out during the gauntlet. He beats up Blake Christian and takes his spot in the gauntlet and wins the gauntlet, and that's his workaround. Now he can get a title shot anytime in the next year. Floated that idea last night. I said, hey, you want to think outside the box a little bit? That'd be one way around the stipulation. Will Ospreay would still be fucked. He still wouldn't be able to challenge for the title until next year, but that could be Swerve's little workaround to that. The pay-per-view is at 3 o'clock Eastern time in the afternoon on Saturday. I assume part of it was that the Wembley shows, because of the time zone difference, were always earlier in the afternoon, and so maybe they didn't want to break from tradition. But also, I'm expecting a very long show. I'm expecting this to be every bit of a five-hour show, not counting the pre-show. Every bit of a five-hour show would be my guess. Like, this show will probably first be ending when Saturday night's main event goes on the air on NBC. So the earlier it is in the afternoon, the better off, because if it's going to be a super long show, I'd much rather it go from 3 to 8 than from, you know, 8 to 12, 8 to 1. We've had pay-per-views that the main event is first coming out at a quarter to midnight, right? We don't need that shit. So just be aware of that. 3 o'clock Eastern time, I think, is the main card start time. Pre-show, yeah, maybe with the pre-show, it starts at 1-ish. I could see them having a two-hour pre-show. So as far as scheduling is concerned, just be aware of that. I will be live after the show, as long as my flight gets me in on time and I get back from Texas to watch the Texas show. We will be live here on the channel for the All In review on Saturday. I have a full preview and predictions for all of the matches on the card right now. There is one bit of information here that I did not mention, but this was reported earlier this afternoon from Mike Johnson on PW Insider. He said there are plans for a six-man tag featuring Big Boom AJ of the Costco guys and some partners against the Don Callis family on the 0 hour pre-show on Saturday. Oh joy. You may be getting the Costco guy. You might get the Rizzler at All In this weekend. So that's per PW Insider. I'm sure they're going to add some more matches yet to this card. This is the card as it currently stands, though. Men's Casino Gauntlet, Women's Casino Gauntlet. Adam Cole, Kyle Fletcher, one-on-one for the TNT title. Swerve Strickland and Will Ospreay against the Young Bucks. You know the stipulations, because I just mentioned them. Hurt Syndicate against Jet Speed against the Patriarchy for the AEW Tag Team titles. FTR should be added to this. We'll see what happens tomorrow night. Timeless Toni Storm, Mercedes Moné for the AEW Women's World Championship. Kenny Omega, Kazuchika Okada, winner take all to crown the first ever AEW Unified Champion. I did hear what Tony Khan said on the press call the other day when he mentioned that it's entirely possible the winner could walk around with all three belts. And the lineage of the two individual titles does not end. The lineage of the international title and the continental title will continue, and the winner could potentially carry all three belts around. This man loves his All Japan Triple Crown, doesn't he? The one thing I just don't understand, why go through the hassle and the expense and the effort to create another belt if you're just going to do that? I don't understand it. Just let them carry the two belts around then, if that's the case. Right? That's what Roman did after he unified him at WrestleMania 38. He carried two belts around for months and months and months until they finally created a single unified championship. And then he got rid of the other two belts. If they're going to do it the other way, I just don't understand the logic behind it. I really don't. He also confirmed the Continental Classic is going to be coming back in November, which is what I figured. Again, why it needs a belt, I don't know. Or if there was going to be a belt, let it be a belt like that Crown Jewel belt that WWE has now where you win it and then you hold it over for the following year. I just don't think it has to be something that is carried around and defended year-round. I thought by having a singular unified title, that was going to eliminate the other two belts, but evidently not. And then soon enough, maybe we'll get those intergenerational tag team titles too. And then women's tag team titles, we'll have dog tag team titles and cat tag team titles, mosquito belts. It's great. What did you think of Dynamite before All In Texas? 52.7% thumbs up, 47.3% thumbs down. Second week in a row? Second or third week in a row where the thumbs up outweighs the thumbs down. How about that? At Solomonster on Twitter or X is where you can go find the poll and vote. All right, let's take a look at your super chats. We are currently at 343 likes, so we need less than 60. If you guys want to do Be the Booker, that's up to you. But you only got a few minutes to get them on in. Less than 60 likes away from Be the Booker. Hey, Duff's Vids is with us tonight. Duff's Vids was with us on TNT last night as well. Good to see you, Duff's. The Moldy Cheeseburger. I'm calling it now. The ending to Hangman versus Moxley will be the WCW Starrcade 97 finish. Mox wins. Sting shows up, accuses that moron Rick Knox of a fast count, resets the match, Hangman Page wins. So your idea is to borrow from one of the singular worst, most infamous finishes in wrestling history. Don't think that's a very wise idea. Wouldn't it make more sense for it to be Darby anyway, if they were going to do something like that? I mean, I get the Sting connection, but I mean, it's really should be Darby. Terrible Dried Chicken says Mark Briscoe is a national treasure. Defined Real, $10 super chat. Thank you, brother. Spent all day at the DMV from 7:30 to 3 p.m., but had my favorite podcaster in my ear the whole time. I just wanted to say thank you for being with me in there. Well, you're very welcome. The DMV sucks. So, it's kind of hard to be happy about anything when it comes to the DMV. So if I was able to help you pass those many boring hours, you are very welcome. Terrible Dried Chicken, AEW All In is like pure country barbecue cookout. NXT Great American Bash is like a college tailgating cookout. Saturday night's main event and Evolution is like added raisins in the potato salad. Why would you put raisins in the potato salad? I don't have potato salad anyway. I'm more of a macaroni salad guy myself. Ed, does MJF's cheap heat actually matter anymore? He says. The J reference felt so forced tonight. Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like played out with me, honestly. You see it coming. It's kind of predictable. I mean, it didn't offend me or anything like that because I'm sure they had fun putting that whole segment together. These two guys wanted to work with each other. You know, there was a whole report about MJF wanting to work with Mark Briscoe. Anything that was said out there was absolutely, you know, planned out by both guys. And so it's not a case where, oh, he overstepped his bounds or anything like that. He didn't overstep anything, but it's all up to a matter of personal taste. I don't think it's anything that's really necessary, but they felt like it was for that segment because he's trying to get under Mark's skin. You know, and now Mark is all crazy and he wants to get his hands on MJF. So that was why they did it. He wanted to get personal with the guy. Hey, D Gibbs, what's going on, man? Tech Nation says that may get Solo invited to the cookout. Am I invited to the cookout? I don't know. I don't want to invite myself. I have to be invited to the cookout. I think I would get along with everybody at the cookout myself. There's Food Hive. Who's in my city for All in Texas? Let's meet up. There you go. There's Food Hive. Anybody who's going to be in town, let him know. He'll take care of the cookout for you. He'll bring the food. That's why he's Food Hive. Terrible Dried Chicken. I'm predicting Swerve and Ospreay will beat the Young Bucks. Also, I'm going with Hangman to win the AEW World title. Sunset ride off, he says. Food Hive, I had a talky talk with this fine thing from the gym.
By the power of Valhalla, it's Vintage Coal Tar.
This fine thing from the gym. What was his name? Havili. Look at this. I was wondering if we were going to hear from Havili tonight. Look at this. Havili with the $65... Super chat here, all the way from Brisbane. Happy Wednesday, Havili. I'm going to read yours in order. We're going to go in order here. Solo has free access to said cookout. I could just walk in. Do I have to bring anything? What do you need? You need some macaroni salad? You need some liquor? We have Terrible Dried Chicken. Be warned, Solomonster. AEW could be tempted to keep the title on Moxley. Everybody in the chat, let's hope and pray they resist those temptations. Also, shout out to you, Solo, says Food Hive. Early flight after a long night of work just to be jet lagged and watch 5 hours of All In. Just to do a stream after for 2 hours. Bless you, man. Yeah, it's going to be a very tough weekend. We got HOG on Friday night. And very early flight on Saturday. Really just going right into the AEW show, which is going to be 17 hours long. We'll get the review done. I don't know when I'm going to get my final work wrapped up for the podcast. There is a podcast on Sunday. Got to get it done somewhat early because we got another PLE. Sunday night, we got Evolution. And then Monday night, we got Raw. Then Tuesday, we got TNT. Then Wednesday, we got Dynamite. The train goes on. So if you guys get stuck at the DMV, you know you'll have plenty of content. Mr. Rod, if Tony has any brains, he'll pull the trigger and put the belt on Hangman. If not, he should never be forgiven. Food Hive, Britt Baker wins the gauntlet. Book it. She could pop up in the gauntlet, but she ain't winning the gauntlet. Capone, the gamer. Darby wins the gauntlet. Moxley beats Hangman. Darby cashes in with Sting's help for story tale ending. So this Moxley run ends with the babyface taking a cheap win via Money in the Bank cash in at the end of the show. Is that really a fairy tale ending? Sounds like a cheap ending to me. Randy Bobandy, thank you for the $9.99. Appreciate that very much. Mikey Too Cool, thank you for the membership. One of my channel members here, you guys are awesome. All the skulls, regardless of what color the skull is, if I see a skull in the chat or a badge, and
No, those guys are the real deal. Terrible dried chicken. Less is more. AEW. Fuck this. Hold my beer. Bender McSimpson. I think Mercedes can be good on the mic, but in AEW, she phones in her promos, and I don't know why. And I liked the trio of Ricochet and the Gates. Yeah, I mean, she's just... her promos are very... they're just very bland. And when you put her in there with somebody like Toni Storm, who, I mean, has this character nailed down, she's just so entertaining when you put a microphone in her hand or a headset on her head. You know, it's almost unfair. She didn't stand a chance in that opening segment. Fire Panda with the $51 coal tar. Tell me why, when I'm trying to watch Seth Rollins on Chris Van Vliet's Clips channel, do I see a Solomonster sign behind Seth in Saudi? I cannot escape you, man. Well, I'm everywhere. You can go back and watch when Liv Morgan won the Women's World Championship in Saudi. There's a giant Solomonster logo sign right behind her. Solomonster is everywhere at all times. And if he's listening, by the way, shout out to Joe, who I met today. So if he hears this, he'll know. Duff's Vids, how do farmers party?
Wooing!
With wooings. There's Havili again. How do farmers party? They... how do farmers party? They turnip the beets. Turnip the beets. Terrible dried chicken. If only MJF said, who cares about dumb old Texas? Patrick Starr. Duff's Vids, how do you steal a coat? You jacket. Terrible dried chicken. One of these days, MJF is going to order some KFC, Popeyes, Chick-fil-A, and Wingstop. Just send it over to Mark Briscoe's farm. Real heat. Oh God, now I have that Wingstop commercial song in my fucking head again. They know better. They know better. Still scarred by that. Duff's Vids, what kind of pants do psychics wear? Paranormal pants. Not so good. Justin Hesse, Gabe owners forever. I hope Gabe is doing well. He was with us last night on the stream. Groovy Goose, do you have a favorite Adam Sandler movie, and which movies would you rank in your top three? Thanks for the reviews and the streams. I probably would go Happy Gilmore, honestly. I mean, Billy Madison. I like Billy Madison. I saw Uncut Gems, which is a much more serious movie. And it was pretty good. I wouldn't call it my favorite Sandler movie, but it was one... it showed me more of his acting range than I think I had seen previously. But I probably would have to go with the Happy Gilmore, the original. Duff's Vids, what do you call a constipated detective? No shit, Sherlock. There you go. A return to form there for Duff's Vids. Justin Hesse. Gabe Owners, Triple Crown AEW champion. Boy, Justin really loves, he really loves Gabe, doesn't he? Little Nicky. I never saw Little Nicky. Never saw that one. Grant Hudson, 18 months of channel membership. Is this your deal, Russo? Today is the 25th anniversary of the Bash at the Beach 2000 work into a shoot, brother, with Hogan and Russo.
another infamous Hogan segment in addition to the one that we just talked about from Starrcade 97. I've talked about this incident extensively on the podcast and how stupid all around it really was. Havili with the 65. What's up, Solomonster? Shout out from Brisbane, Australia. Havili, are you going to be making the trip to Perth? See, now you would know better than I would. What is the distance from Brisbane to Perth? I assume we're talking a plane ride, not a car ride. Like, what is the distance? Mileage-wise, hours. How far is Brisbane from Perth? Says, how you doing today? It is Thursday, the 10th of July. Thoughts on Michelle not getting invited to Evolution? He's talking about Michelle McCool. I don't believe her. I don't believe that she wasn't invited. I think she'll pop up in the Battle Royal. There was a post on Facebook saying that Randy Orton is the COVID killer. Okay. I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean. Thank you, Havili. Oh, there he is. Gabe Owners is with us. I'm a simple guy. I see Solo, I send a super chat. Thank you, Gabe. You're always welcome here. The Juliet, Tony Khan likes people with multiple belts as much as he likes interim titles. Yes. Base Beerus, thank you for the two. Havili again with a $13 super chat. Do you remember that couple of weeks ago that I asked you and JD about Sean and Booker T was the original option for the Battle of the Billionaires at WrestleMania 23? The reason it didn't happen was because Triple H got injured. I don't remember ever hearing that back in the day, that the original plan was Sean and Booker T to be in that spot. I mean, I know Sean took the main event against Cena when Triple H went down with the injury, so it's possible that their original plan was screwed up for the Battle of the Billionaires, but I mean, I never heard it was going to be Sean against Booker T in that match. All right, so Quizzical says Brisbane to Perth. Well, that's not that far. That's just a simple 2,700 miles, apparently. It's going to be a long car ride if you try to drive. Well, that answers that question. Coast-to-coast flight, he says. All right. I wasn't sure. I don't know the geography. There's lots of different places in Australia. It's a very big place. Very big continent. Base Beerus, can you rank the AEW pay-per-views in terms of importance? No, I mean, it's kind of all over the place now. It used to be Double or Nothing, and then it was All Out, and I feel like it changes from year to year. In terms of importance, though, like right now at this moment, and the last probably couple of years, All In would be number one, clearly. But I think as far as number two, if you told me... I'm tempted to say Revolution. I feel like Revolution has overtaken Double or Nothing. So it might be All In, Revolution, All Out, Double or Nothing, Full Gear. Maybe that's a fair ranking. Dynasty and World's End, I don't even rank those. Base Beerus, I had some grilled cheese off the radiator. 20 fucking years. 20 fucking years. I ate grilled cheese off the radiator, and I did my business in a sock. I guess some people listening to this going, what the fuck is he talking about? It's the great Phil Leotardo. And Tomatonga Superfan. With a $10 super chat. Which hypothetical tag team would be better, Owen Hart and Tama Tonga or Bret Hart and Tonga Loa?
I know it's Sophie's choice for you, given your deep admiration for both Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. I think that I would have to go Owen Hart and Tama Tonga. Like, legit, I think that's the better team. Like, I'm answering this question in a serious way. Owen Hart and Tama Tonga would be a better tag team than Bret Hart and Tonga Loa. Base Beers, thank you for the $12 learning tree. Chris Jericho will not be on the all... Well, I mean, I guess he could be in the gauntlet. Oh, my God. What if he's in the gauntlet and he wins? Then he's got a guaranteed world championship match. Might we see the learning tree in the casino gauntlet? Food Hive. Hope Captain Planet doesn't think the unified belt is plastic, like that one call on the stream during the pandemic. He had a meltdown when Thunder Rosa debuted. Thunder Rosa at the time had the NWA Women's Championship, and he was very upset because he was under the impression that the belt looked plastic. And this was a very memorable phone call that we had on the stream that I have clipped, and I do have it somewhere. It was an all-timer. But he was very upset about that. And Havili, with another $6 super chat. I meant that every time Randy Orton faces someone, he takes them out. They leave WWE, and in a couple of months or a year, they join AEW. For example, Edge, Big Show, and Matt Hardy. Yes, I didn't get the COVID killer reference, unless it was referencing all the people that basically were RKO'd out of the company during COVID, I guess. Is that the idea behind it? Just Reddit Things. What is the best way to buy the pay-per-view? Never watched AEW before. You can actually buy the show a lot of different ways. It's on Amazon Prime Video now. So if you have a Amazon Prime Video subscription, you still have to buy it. But it's another option as far as how you watch the show. You're still going to have to pay, I don't know where you are. If, let's say you're in the States somewhere, you'll have to pay $50. But you can watch it through Amazon Prime Video. You can watch it through YouTube. Actually, that's how I've been doing it now for a few months. I go on the AEW YouTube channel. They'll have a video page parked for it. You just have to buy it through there, and you'll have access to it for a certain period of time. It's not permanent. Eventually, you will no longer have access to it, which I think is bullshit. But so, yeah, YouTube is one way. Amazon Prime Video, Triller TV if you're international. PPV.com is another way. And there's, I think, a couple of other ways too. But for me personally, I've been doing it on YouTube, and quality-wise, it's been fine. And Base Beerus says, what's the craziest thing you've seen on the subway? I wish I could tell you Subway Mania, but I've never been on the subway when Subway Mania broke out. I've never been that fortunate. Craziest thing I've seen on a subway. Somebody fell asleep on the train once, and a rat or a mouse, it had to be a rat, or the biggest fucking mouse I've ever seen in my life was on the car with us, which I did not realize. So then I saw it and I freaked, but it went up the guy's leg. Again, he's just like laid out sleeping. It went up the guy's leg and up his chest and onto his shoulder. And he woke up. I don't think he realized what had happened, but like, he probably heard the shrieks from the women on the train. And then he woke up, but I don't think he actually, he didn't freak out or anything, because once he kind of was awake, it wasn't around him anymore. But I saw it. Freaked me the fuck out.
Base Beer says Umanga and Tajiri. Now you got to say it the way Steve Austin used to say it. Tajiri. He used to call him Tajiri. B-Money 04. If Hangman Page doesn't win the title at All In this weekend, do we get a rant similar to Hell in a Cell 2019? Probably not. The Hell in a Cell rant is just... It's an all-timer unto itself. And to this day, it is still something that just makes me shake my head, but it actually gets me a little upset even when I think about it now. The fact that somebody actually booked that match, whether it was Vince himself or somebody else came up with the idea and Vince said, yeah, that's a great idea, pal. And they actually said, hey, you know what? I think that's going to be the finish of this pay-per-view. Amazing, isn't it? But like in this case, and by the way, you know, that was an ending that I did not see coming because I just never imagined they would come up with something that horrendous. Here, though, there's a very distinct possibility. Like, I go into this knowing and acknowledging that Jon Moxley may well walk out of this fucking show as the AEW World Champion if they are setting up for a Darby Allin win at a later date. I already know that the possibility exists. So I wouldn't say it would be Hell in a Cell type of rant, but I would not be happy. Let's put it that way. I would not be happy with the outcome of this show if that happens. Terrible Dry Chicken, to honor Bill Goldberg, pick and delete two movies that feature Goldberg. The Universal Soldiers returns, Ready to Rumble, Looney Tunes back in action. I would never delete a Looney Tunes movie. I'll pick and delete two movies that feature Goldberg. You named three movies, though. All right, pick one, delete two is what he's saying. Pick Looney Tunes, delete the other two. You didn't mention Santa Slay as well. He was in Santa Slay. And Food Hive, going to All In, do I have to buy pay-per-view to rewatch? If you're going to All In, do you have to buy it? Of course you have to buy it. What do you think, you're special? You'll pay for your ticket, and then you'll come home and pay for the pay-per-view. That's how it works. Major, in my opinion, Bron Breakker should have been Goldberg's last opponent. I pitched that idea many months ago. So you're preaching to the choir here, Major. You and I agree. Let him die by the sword that made him famous. Let him eat a wicked spear or two or three and go out looking up at the lights and putting over Steiner's kid on the way out. The successor to the spear. The only man who, honestly, at least in WWE, if not all of wrestling, should be allowed to do the spear is Bron Breakker, at least in that company. Because nobody else can do it the way that he does it. So I don't know why you would want to take that same move and do it in an inferior way. Just let the guy inherit the move and just retire it for everybody else. Base Beerus says, do you think Brian Pillman would have been a main eventer or a world champion? Well, he was already a main eventer in WWE towards the end there as part of the Hart Foundation. Would he have been a world champion? Are you talking had he not died or had he not had the accident? Those are two different questions. I think had he not had the accident, I always said this. I always felt like the program coming out of WrestleMania would not have been Austin and Dude Love. It would have been Austin and Pillman. And I think they could have traded the title back and forth once or twice. So had he not gotten hurt, I do think Brian Pillman
would... Do you feel him, sir?
I do. I do think Brian Pillman would have been a world champion. It might have been brief, but I do think he would have won. If he had had the accident, but then didn't pass away, no, he was not going to be a world champion. Joseph Brooks, cherish, keep, borrow, sell. These Brock Lesnar matches with someone smaller than him, AJ Styles, Daniel Bryan, Finn Balor, and CM Punk. CM Punk, I am cherishing their SummerSlam match. I'm going to keep the AJ Styles match. It's so tough though between AJ and Bryan. I think I may keep the AJ match, borrow the Bryan match, and I'm selling on the Finn Balor match at the Royal Rumble. Number one, Homo Sapien says, "Did you hear about the sensitive burglar? He takes things personally." Thank you, Homo Sapien. Personally. Duff's Vid, someone asked me to name two structures that hold water. I was like, well, damn. Base Barris, did Edge have a good spear? No, I don't think he did. The best spear he ever delivered was to Jeff Hardy off the ladder at WrestleMania 17. Otherwise, it always looked to me like he was hugging his opponent. Bobby Lashley doesn't have a terrible spear. Rhino had he had the gore, which was awesome. Terrible dry chicken. Imagine Goldberg trying to do a dive on Gunther. Thank God. He's just gonna go for broke. YOLO, he yells YOLO as he dives out over the top rope. Then he doesn't get up. Can you imagine? Goldberg yelling YOLO and trying to do a dive out over the top rope. Gunther's not expecting it, and he just watches as he splats on the ground. Bret Hart starts cracking up laughing, sitting on his lazy boy at home. Oh, man. Thank you guys for the super chats. We are at 435 likes. So for the first time in 2 weeks here on a Wednesday night, that means that we are going to be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the Booker.
Oh, yes, indeed. That's exactly what we're going to be doing. It is time for the final time, at least until Saturday. Because remember, there's no Friday stream, no SmackDown review this week. I will not be here. So at least until the weekend, this will be our last Be the Booker. Let's try to make it a good one. We begin with the former AEW and HOG tag team champions, Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy, Private Party, who supposedly have interest potentially from WWE for an NXT run. I think NXT would be a good place for them to be. Private Party against Sting and Darby Allin. Whoops. There we go. Father and son. I have a feeling we're going to be seeing the two of them at the end of that pay-per-view on Saturday. Look at this. Sting looks like a disappointed dad in this photo. Darby just told him like another stupid stunt that he just did. Almost killed himself. Sting is just looking at him like, what am I going to do with you? Where is Private Party? They're on the bench. They have a seat right next to Britt Baker. I kind of picture the AEW bench and all these people that never get on TV anymore as like a giant waiting room, like at a doctor's office. You kind of pull a number. Remember the end scene in the first Beetlejuice movie when he has to pull a number and he sits in the chair and he's got the guy with the shrunken head sitting next to him. I kind of picture like the AEW waiting room, and Britt Baker is in there and Private Party is in there, and anybody else that you haven't seen recently on television, they're also in there. They're just waiting for their number to be called. Nia Jax, here in Women's Be the Booker, is one half of our women's match. Nia Jax will be taking on Trish Stratus. That could have been an Evolution match. Trish Stratus is wrestling for the WWE Women's Championship this weekend. What do you think about Trish and Nia? Give it the bell, because Nia has had some really good TV matches over the past year. Trish, the last match that Trish had was the best match of her career. I don't care what anybody says. It was. It could potentially be good. Not great, but it could potentially be good. And our main event. Groovy Goose. Groovy Goose says, hole on a pole match. My hole. Hole on a pole, huh? How did we go from Hell in a Cell to hole on a pole? Ravishing Rick Rude. I'll bet he got into his fair share of holes over the years. Look at this guy. He had the ladies melting every time he would come down to the ring and takes off his robe. Ravishing Rick Rude. Rocking the porn stash. Against Hulk Hogan. Could have been a pay-per-view program. Could have been a pay-per-view match in WWE. It just never happened. I think they had a house show match at least once. I know I saw it at Madison Square Garden once on, and I wasn't in the garden for it, but I recall seeing it at least once before. But yeah, that was a program that we never got to see. I know it would not have ended well for Rick Rude, but it would have been nice to see. So we got Rude and the Warrior instead. Rude said, maybe I can go over tonight. And Hogan said, that don't work for me, brother. We all know how that match went. And then Vince McMahon came in and said, no, you know what, Hulk? I think we are actually going to put Rude over in this match. I think you're going to go down to the Rude Awakening as the finish. And so Hogan took his finishing move, and then he said,
oh, you got me, brother.
And poor Rick Rude had massive heat after that for hurting Hulk Hogan. Anyway, it was a match we never got to see. It's too bad, but that's how it is. But we got a clean sweep. That's the outcome we always shoot for here in Be the Booker. We always shoot for a clean sweep. We put together a very respectable card tonight. Hulk Hogan against Rick Rude, Nia Jax against Trish Stratus. The tag team match, which I have already forgotten. I completely forgot what the tag team match was that we booked. My memory is mush. I just booked it, and I already forgot what it was. Base Beer says, YOLO Solo. Joseph Brooks with the $4.99. As bad as the run was, can you think of at least five great Bret Hart WCW matches? The WCW run was bad, but Bret was still Bret. He won all the WCW belts, too. He did. He won the tag belt. He won the U.S. title. I don't remember if he won the TV title. He won the world title. I was not a fan of his run in WCW. It never felt like Bret to me. I don't enjoy going back and watching his WCW matches for the most part. If I ever go back and watch Bret matches, I'm watching his WWE stuff. Like I mentioned, they have that four-hour Bret Hart mixtape they put together on the Vault channel. And they had a Bret Hart Conan match from Nitro, I think it was, and I just skip right through it. Like, I don't give a shit. Because it just wasn't the same to me. It's like Bobby Heenan in WCW. Like, it just wasn't the same. But if you want me to name some matches, obviously the Nitro match with Benoit, the Owen Hart tribute match, was a great match. I remember the sold out match, I think, with Ric Flair. I think that was also a pretty good match. He had a match with Benoit in the finals of that tournament to win the world title. I think that was pretty good. But it's just hard for me to think of too many matches from his WCW run that I truly liked. You know, I'm sure there was a Bret Hart DDP match at some point that I must have enjoyed, or Bret Hart and Sting, but I couldn't tell you what event it was from. I don't know. Terrible dry chicken. Rick Rude against Hulk Hogan. Winner gets to the Playboy Mansion. Bass Bears, can we get a Repo Man with the voice modulator?
Repo Man.
And hit the music. Ah, Repo Man. What's not to love about Repo Man? Come on. Major, JBL's reign was underrated. He made Eddie bigger. Actually, Eddie made JBL is what really happened there. I think JBL would be the first person to tell you that, too. It was the other way around. Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of, like, Brett... In terms of Brett segments, because we were talking matches specifically, but I do need to point out, like, there was some stuff that Brett did in WCW that was actually quite great. Obviously, the El Dandy promo, which they also showed on that Bret Hart mixtape on the Vault. That's awesome. There was another promo where Brett, and I think he admitted, like, at this point in time, he just didn't care anymore. He was pitching ideas. It was falling on deaf ears. He's like, you know what?
Fuck that tree.
Now, there was one episode of Nitro where he came out and started talking about his cat. What was his? I forgot his cat's name. Was it Smokey? Smokey the cat, maybe? Like, literally, just started talking about his cat. He didn't give a shit at that point. But now I'm sorry that we never had Bret Hart coming down to the ring with his cat. That would have been fantastic. And then, of course, the big one where he wore the metal plate under his under the jersey. Was it the Oilers? Maple Leafs. I think it was the Maple Leafs jersey. And Goldberg came down, speared him, and knocked himself out. And then he revealed that he was wearing the metal plate, chest plate. That's like peak Bret in WCW, is that moment. So there was some good stuff that he did, but in terms of matches, nothing that could hold a candle to his work in WWE. Havili, back again. Havili says, don't worry, Solid Monster, about asking JD the question. I finally got YouTube to accept it. That's good. By the way, so far, the top 25 greatest SummerSlam match is Cody versus Brock, Cena versus Seth, Brett versus Undertaker, and Brock against Seth. Thank you, Yuta Goat. Thank you, Havili. So are you. Yeah, they're doing a countdown, right? So that is, what is that? 25 through 20? Is that what that is? I think they just started a top SummerSlam matches countdown. I would assume the number one match is probably going to be Brett and Bulldog from Wembley in 92. There have been some great SummerSlam matches. Bass Beerus, you're very welcome. He dropped in with the learning tree. Number one, Homo Sapien, if things worked out differently, do you think that we could have ever gotten Brett against Benoit in WWE for the title? Yeah, I mean, if things worked out differently health-wise for Brett, sure. Absolutely. Sean D., 27 months of membership. But why does Repo Man wear a mask? That's a perfectly legitimate job. Not the way he did it, though. The whole point was that he wasn't being legitimate in what he was doing. He was just robbing people. They were one day late on their payment. He's breaking into their homes and stealing their shit. He could have been arrested. So he had to disguise himself by wearing a Zorro mask. Base Beer says Repo Man had glass shattering before Austin. He did. He did have the glass shatter, didn't he? That's right. See, Repo Man was Austin before Austin was Austin. And Terrible Dried Chicken, enjoy the food in Texas. Get the barbecue ribs. I had great food when I was in Dallas back in 2016. Went to a barbecue place, and it's just a bunch of barbecue on the paper they give you, and you just put the paper on the table, no plate, no nothing. You just chow down, and the food was great. I wish I had more time this time. I'm not going to really get to enjoy the cuisine this time. I don't even know if I'm going to have dinner on Friday. It depends when I get in. I may have a granola bar for dinner, but hopefully next time I make it back to Texas, I'll be able to actually enjoy the fine cuisine. Bret Hart would do it. Would do what? What would he do? We should have gotten Kurt Angle against Mr. Perfect at WrestleMania 18. I still stand behind that. It would have been nice to see him have a cool singles match like that on that card. Instead, we got Kurt Angle against Kane, which was not as good as what Kurt Angle and Mr. Perfect would have been. Kurt Angle and Kane actually had a really good U.S. title match on SmackDown that year. Not as good as their WrestleMania match was not as good as that U.S. title match. And Major. Take out Triple H, HBK, and Kane. What is your favorite Undertaker feud? Mankind. Thank you, Major. Thoughts on the SNES? I own the SNES, and I loved it. Some of my favorite games were played on the SNES. Super Mario World. WrestleMania. Was it WrestleMania? It was Super WrestleMania. I love the SNES. Might still be my favorite console, actually, from back in the day. And I pretty much owned them all. Not all of them, but most of them. I didn't have the 32X. I didn't have Neo Geo. But I had a bunch of Ataris, 2600, and two other ones. NES, SNES, Genesis, Game Boy, Game Gear. Saturn, I did not have. Did not have Sega Saturn. Havili, it is 25 to 23 in the countdown. Thoughts on CVV interviews with Steve Blackman saying that his career in WWE was short because he was having neck issues and bad headaches. I have not watched the interview yet, but I'm very anxious to. He got invited to Steve Blackman's home to interview him. So I'm very interested to go check that out. Base Beerus says, first Texas death match in Texas. I know, it's amazing, right? We always get them in other places, but we're actually getting one in Texas. Major says, oh, and take out Mick. No, it doesn't work that way. You don't get to take out all of those people. Now you're cheating. You've taken out all the ones that were worth a shit. Kurt Angle, I guess. But I'm going with Mankind. Undertaker's greatest rival. More than Kane, more than HBK. It was Mankind. And Terrible Dried Chicken, I am predicting Seth Rollins will win the WWE title. Okay, I predict he won't. Let's see who's right. Thank you for all the love here on a Wednesday night. This was more like it. Some excitement headed into the big Texas Stadium show this weekend. I am looking forward to the show. I am looking forward to being with you all for the live review when the show is over. So please make sure that you come on back to the channel. What I might do is actually get the page up on Friday morning before I leave. I might get the just park the page there so it's up. It's all taken care of. You guys can chat amongst yourselves if you want to chat or drop a super chat, whatever it may be. So just watch for that. And when that show is over, I'll be live. You got a lot of content coming your way this weekend, though. this weekend into the beginning of next week. I hope you appreciate it. I hope you enjoy it. I hope you watch. I hope you listen. Havili says, sorry, I meant 25 to 22. That's okay, brother. Just keep track of that countdown and keep me posted. I have not been following their top SummerSlam matches countdown. I've done my own countdowns in the past. I'm pretty sure I've done a SummerSlam matches. In fact, I know for a fact I have. It's up on the channel right now. If you go to the playlist section of this very channel, several years ago, I think I did a top, was it 9 or 10? I think top 10 SummerSlam matches of all time. I'm pretty sure. So be sure to go back and check that out. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great rest of your week. Check out HOG on Friday night if you're not watching SmackDown, or Ring of Honor. We'll be streaming on Triller TV Plus. We got some good action coming up in Texas at the Haltom City Theater. And then a big weekend of wrestling coming up. Until then, take care, guys.